KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting music from Cobra Kai, The Penguin, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Star Wars Skeleton Crew, and more, performed live by all-star ensemble of studio musicians, July 21st at UC San Diego. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Tuesday, June 30th. San Diego is trying to keep the affordable housing that it already has. More on how next, but first, the headlines. Navy officials are looking for the body of a Camp Pendleton Marine who went missing off of our Southern California coast on Thursday. The Navy said the Marine was serving aboard the San Diego-based USS Anchorage. CBS 8 says the Marine's family has identified him as Lance Corporal Armando Ortiz Canseco and say he went missing during an integrated training exercise. U.S. officials say the U.S. Navy, U.S. Coast Guard, U.S. Air Force, and the U.S. Marine Corps utilized 3 ships and 12 aircrafts in an attempt to rescue the missing Marine. Forecasters anticipate a gradual warming trend starting Thursday and into the July 4th weekend. Until then, the National Weather Service says you can expect relatively mild temperatures overall. The Weather Service also says a marine layer has deepened in our North County coastal areas and will remain through Friday. One San Diego-based restaurant and one San Diego-based sommelier earned their way onto Michelin's coveted California Guide this year. The La Jolla-based Lucien was the sole restaurant in San Diego to earn a new Michelin star, earning a 1-star rating. Additionally, this year, Savannah Riedler of the Carlsbad-based Lilo earned the Michelin Sommelier Award. Also worth noting, Oceanside's Valle, which first received their Michelin star back in 2023 and maintained it for 3 years, lost their single star for 2026. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
The San Diego City Council voted Monday to establish an Affordable Housing Preservation Fund. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says it's backed by fees paid by developers.
The Preservation Fund will help pay to rehabilitate aging affordable housing projects and to keep the rents affordable for a longer period of time. Thousands of San Diegans who live in affordable housing are at risk of losing their homes as the affordability restrictions on their housing expire. Councilmember Sean Ila Rivera said the fund will help keep vulnerable people in their homes.
There's a lot of conversations about maintaining community character, as community character being something that needs to be preserved. And community character comes from people, and we protect people by preserving affordable housing.
The council voted to allocate $5.9 million to the Preservation Fund for the fiscal year that starts on July 1st. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
Immigration is taking center stage before the Supreme Court. Last week, the court issued rulings on asylum and temporary protected status. This week, the court will rule on a birthright citizenship case. Reporter Gustavo Solis explains the impact.
The Supreme Court ruled last week that the Trump administration can turn back asylum seekers at ports of entry along the border. Melissa Crowe is the director of litigation at the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies. She's been fighting this practice ever since it surfaced in San Diego more than a decade ago.
When, for the first time ever, Customs and Border Protection officers started turning back asylum seekers at ports of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border.
The High Court also eliminated protections for Haitians and Syrian nationals who have temporary protected status because of the dangerous conditions in their home countries.
I think both of these decisions, which were 6-3, show that the court really doesn't care that much about non-citizens, no matter how long they have been there and regardless of their ties to the country.
Next up is a ruling on Trump's efforts to end birthright citizenship. Crow notes that the birthright issue is a constitutional case, which makes it very different from the two other immigration-related cases. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
Every day, 23 Californians die from exposure to toxic road vehicle pollution. That's according to a report out this week by the International Council on Clean Transportation. Environment reporter Tammy Murga has the local data.
The study shows every day one San Diego County resident dies from vehicle pollution, and roughly one new pediatric asthma case emerges. Josh Miller is with the International Council on Clean Transportation. He says medium and heavy-duty vehicles are the top emitters.
San Diego County also has the fifth highest number of warehouses among counties in California. So there is a very clear connection between the freight infrastructure and activity and the health burden that we're seeing.
Lindsay Jin is a researcher with the council. She says vehicle pollution hits hardest in neighborhoods with busy roads,
which is also why kids living near freeways and freight hubs might end up carrying so much of this asthma burden.
The study argues deaths linked to vehicle pollution should gradually decline. Miller says greater health benefits will depend on how fast the transition to zero-emission vehicles happens. Tammy Murga, KPBS News.
The former official who oversaw the county's animal shelters has filed a lawsuit against the county. KPBS's Scott Rodd reports the lawsuit alleges defamation and sexual harassment.
Former Animal Services Assistant Director Rachel Borelli was put on administrative leave last fall. This happened the day before KPBS reported on a profane voice message Borelli had sent that disparaged shelter dogs and called for increasing euthanasias. The county then fired her in January. Now, Borelli claims that firing was an act of retaliation. In her lawsuit, Borelli alleges an employee had spread false rumors about her, specifically that she was only hired after having a sexual relationship with a previous department director. According to her lawsuit, Borelli complained about the employee's conduct to Human Resources, but she was told to drop the matter. She claims the county failed to adequately investigate her complaint and discipline the employee. The county declined to comment on the litigation. Scott Rodd, KPBS News.
For the Filipino diaspora, food is a strong tether to their homeland and their identity. But for decades, traditional fruits and vegetables from the Philippines were hard to come by. In part three of our series, reporter Elaine Alfaro shares how the Filipino community has continued culinary and cultural traditions in home gardens.
If you could see me now, the one who said I'd rather be alone.
You can often hear Modesta Gunawa Amiling in her backyard before you see her.
Oh, instead of talking to my husband because he don't listen, I talk to my plants. Like, oh, you're so beautiful. Good morning.
Either singing to the leafy camote tops or complimenting her calamansi fruits.
I sing to them too.
Can you give us a sample?
Oh yeah, I can sing sad movies always makes me cry. That's an old one.
Mm-hmm. Gunawa Amiling's garden is part of the collective story of San Diego's Filipino-American community, which is one of the largest in the United States. She grew up in a remote area of Kalinga, Philippines, which had limited access to stores or markets. So her family grew what they ate.
While growing up as a kid, our parents don't have to tell us to plant. We are still babies, I think, that we cannot still understand. And we know that when we grow up, they will gonna start doing the soil, to dig the soil and plant something for food, for survival.
She came to San Diego in 1984 after her husband was stationed at a naval base. Filipino migration to San Diego was heavily influenced by the Navy, Servicemen who were stationed here would petition to bring their wives and children to set up their new life in areas like Paradise Hills and National City. These home gardens speak to a bigger part of Filipino culture that Joanna LaTorre grew up with in her grandparents' house. Then she made it central to her PhD research at the University of Washington.
This is just a very important site of cultural reproduction where they're not just growing foods, they're also practicing their culture, a culture of generosity, a culture that they have been practicing since before they got here, is how they are raised, and they continue to do it.
These home gardens often have camote, calamansi, lemon, sitaw, and ampalaya, all fruits and vegetables from the Philippines that are foundational to traditional Filipino dishes, like sinigang. Alfonso Villamora also grew up like Gunawa Amiling, growing crops out of necessity.
My gardening started even overseas, because that was already in my psyche. Where I grew up, that was something I did, raised vegetables, because self-sufficiency is what our parents taught us.
Villamora says access to Filipino fruits and vegetables in San Diego looked a lot different in 1975.
Back here, I started growing many vegetables because at that time we had to go to downtown just to buy vegetable meat. There wasn't a whole lot of Oriental outlets.
So he'd bring back seeds from the Philippines for his garden. Over the years, his garden has produced camote, calamansi, and more. And his family has grown, too. He has three granddaughters, 6-year-old Eleanor Rigby, 12-year-old Abby Rode, and 14-year-old Penny Lane. Yes, you're hearing it right, all inspired by the Beatles.
They got a lot of memories. It reminds me that they were part much of this garden, their lives.
He set aside their own spaces in the garden. Abbey Road and Penny Lane have their own street signs in the front yard, and Ellie Rigby has her own hideout. Here's how the girls describe the garden. Penny first.
I feel like a sense of comfort knowing the garden is like where I basically come from, and like where, like, that's basically the garden that I've lived with my whole life.
And Abby.
What I feel when I go into the garden, I just feel like really calm because it's all quiet and like peaceful back there.
And Ellie.
It feels like love coming from a long way.
The girls intend to continue the lessons their Lolo taught them in both gardening and cooking. Penny and her sisters dream of the day they'll have their own spaces to nurture and grow, just like their Lolo. Elaine Alfaro, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced. That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfiresafety.